Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I'm Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. In today's episode, I am joined by Dipanka Jyoti and Jim Hutchison. Dipanka, or otherwise known as DJ, and Jim are two experienced Salesforce architects in the US who have both recently written a book together called The Salesforce Architect's Handbook. The book is coming out in January, so I wanted to pick their brains on the reason they felt there was a gap in the market for the book, what the book's all about, and then run through their career to date and the gaps they see in the market for learning to be a Salesforce architect and progressing towards the CTA, which they're both aiming for. Two really interesting guys, really great chat, and it was great to hear more about the book and the gaps it's plugging in the market. And I think it will be really valuable to a lot of our listeners. So I really hope you enjoy the episode. If you do, please do follow DJ and Jim. I think they're both great guys to be following. And also, please subscribe for future episodes of this podcast that are coming through. DJ and Jim, thank you so much for joining me today. And I know you're both in separate locations, right? Are you in the same city now? Or?
Yeah, not anymore. I'm in the DC suburbs area.
And I'm out of Orlando, Florida.
Oh, nice. So you've got the sun.
I do.
All year round?
4 year round. Yep, pretty much.
People think Australia is sunny all year round, and it does actually get cold here in winter. People don't believe it. I didn't believe it myself until I got here. But yeah, but you actually are nice and warm all year round.
It's usually, I mean, we do have a little bit of cool weather in the January, February time, but cool for us, we're freezing. But if you went up north, they'd be laughing at us because it's still in the city. You know, it's actually nice, you know, but it's all what you get used to.
Yeah, so you don't have that pleasure, DJ.
I do not, but I at least get to see the leaves changing and, you know, can play in the snow. Jim, I guess, can't do anymore.
Yeah, no.
So no, I get to play with the grandkids. So
you have different benefits, right? So yeah, thanks so much for joining me. So we've got a lot to run through today. We're going to cover, obviously, a bit about your careers, but also your upcoming book that's coming out, which I'm excited to hear more about. I always like to start, though, with looking backwards and looking at kind of careers before Salesforce. So who wants to get started giving us an overview of life before Salesforce?
You bet. So I'll start that off. So I've been in the technology world since graduating from high school. Started in the United States Navy and then kind of went very quickly into kind of the corporate world. I worked at companies like NCR Corporation and then moved into electronic distribution. So for me, the path to Salesforce was really technology, marketing, sales. I really worked through kind of the infrastructure, was a senior executive at a Fortune 1000 and made a decision in 2014 to jump into Salesforce as a full-time job. So I had been working Salesforce, doing a lot of things in the corporate infrastructure for that, but it was always as a secondary part of my role. So I've been in the ecosystem now for about 17 years, but the first 10 of those was really, you know, as a very senior level executive making the decisions on where did we go, how did we do it. And then, of course, every time somebody said, have you ever done? It was like, you know, I've done the Salesforce side. So I always ended up with that product set. So it's something that I really liked and decided to really take the career path to go that direction.
Yeah, nice. And what about yourself, DJ?
No, I think for me, it was a little bit of a different story. I came from the background where I was focused more on business transformation. So I started my career around 2000 in the midst of actually doing my MBA, and essentially was doing more of a strategy consulting, doing Six Sigma consulting and so forth. And then Six Sigma took a nosedive when Agile came in and all of those kind of pieces. But as part of one of the parting gifts from Six Sigma projects was one of the projects I was doing for a client. Essentially, they wanted to build something in Salesforce. Actually, we were looking more into the low-code, no-code platform and brought in Salesforce. And I started getting hands-on with it. And I started realizing how much little technical knowledge do you need to at least get started with Salesforce. So that was my entry into that. I got into a few more clouds, but still my central point has been Salesforce. And now I'm with IBM as their associate partner managing Salesforce assets globally.
Nice. How did you come to know each other?
Great question. So it was interesting. We both worked at Capgemini together previous to my IBM life. And we always heard about each other. Jim was representing the government side. I was representing the commercial side. We'll meet someday. But then we joined a 601 CTA study group because we were both studying for our CTA. Pretty much met each other's like, oh, you're Jim and you're DJ.
Yeah.
And eventually, actually, one of the genesis of our book vision was more from that 601 where we were paired together and we started doing the CTA scenarios together. And we realized like we had a lot of common approaches that others were finding it very unique. So they really essentially got into the idea of we should share this with the entire people.
Sure.
Everybody.
So, DJ, you're with IBM. Jim, you're still with Capgemini?
That's correct. I'm still with Capgemini.
And what are your kind of day-to-day roles look like now? So Jim, what do you focus on?
Yeah, so I'm the, for Capgemini Government Solutions, which is focused on U.S. federal government. My role there is the Salesforce practice lead, but my responsibility is really as the chief technical architect for any of the projects that we do within the federal government. So I have the opportunity on a day-to-day basis, not only to work with the Salesforce platform, but also to really look at that overall architecture perspective within each of the agencies that we work with. So right now we've got about 135 folks delivering Salesforce solutions for us in the federal government.
And federal government means you can't get your architecture wrong, right? It's high profile. No.
Very high profile, very high, you know, high usability, high visibility, you know, a lot of, you know, different types of projects, which makes it really interesting because we do everything from, you know, working in, you know, call center type applications, you know, citizen support versus call center or customer support. But we also do very advanced type things where we're doing AI type solutions, we're doing chatbots, we're doing, you know, a lot of things that you wouldn't normally think of a federal client going after. The federal organizations are really spending a lot more time trying to meet the needs of the citizens in a way that is very different than they've ever done in the past. And they're catching up with the industry very quickly.
Sure. And DJ, having moved on from Cap and now to IBM, what does your kind of day-to-day look like?
For me, I think the key value for, and I shouldn't say key value, I think Capgemini is an excellent organization. IBM is an excellent organization of its own. But where the value comes in is that right now, I'm getting involved a lot more with integrating IBM hybrid cloud, such as Watson, as well as blockchain with Salesforce. So many of my projects are really building internal applications that have a hybrid model of that. And also, you know, a lot of our approach towards Salesforce implementations have been more around building assets and kind of approaching that. So that's where my primary responsibility. And it's a new job role, specifically a design towards me. So it kind of helped me a little bit to take this position.
Sure. Nice. So I'm guessing you've both been on the CTA path. Is that something that you're both working towards right now? You're motivated by?
Yeah, we both are actively pursuing the CTA process. And probably for me, the biggest thing is the motivation is less about the CTA credential, and it's about the learning journey that we take as we go through the process. So each time I kind of go into the process of really studying either for a domain exam or for a CTA board exam, it's really to learn what are the elements that kind of go along with that. So to me, it's really that pulling together of the capabilities and then validating that in a way that's really meaningful. So I learn more out of every time I do different things within the CTA journey, I'm learning more about how to apply that on a day-to-day basis than I am actually doing from a certification perspective. But it is a motivating factor.
Sure.
DJ, how about yourself?
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, it always reminds me of like a movie that, and I'm going to date myself probably by sharing the movie name. It's like 36 Chambers of Shaolin. So in that movie, this gentleman has to kind of fight 36 chambers of the Shaolin Temple to get to the top. And I feel like it has been that kind of a journey. And, you know, it's one of those where like you can't just fudge one of the chambers. You have to know essentially every crux and nuance of that and be able to present it in the timely manner and so forth. So again, it's a lot about the journey. What has helped me the most is like initially when I would go away from the client and tell them like, I'll come back to you 2 days later with a solution. But now it's almost like instantaneously, I can answer that and be 100% confident about it, which even without the CTA, I've won, you know?
Sure. So, yeah, nice. So you were both going through the 601 course and you kind of realized there's a gap in the market for a book or some extra information that's going to help people on this journey. What kind of tweaked that realization?
Yeah, maybe I could kind of give my perspective, and Jim, if you want to add in. But essentially, for me, really the big challenge was that when I was doing my architect domain exams, I realized that it was all piecemeal information everywhere. And there was no context around, let's say, like each domain, like identity and access management. In our book, for example, we kind of talk about the 9 stages that you have to consider for any identity and access management description. DevOps. When we talk DevOps, it's so big, but then there are 6 archetypes of DevOps that you have to consider in every DevOps practice of Salesforce. How do you do data model? There's no one way, but we have kind of introduced a unique way in which like you can read an RFP or a proposal and kind of go. When we were thinking through this and we were sharing this with each other, we said, you know what? This will be extremely valuable because if I wish I knew this, I would have passed my domain architect exams much easily, right? So that's just the reason why we started writing the way we were writing.
Yeah, and very similar in the thought process. For me, it wasn't that the information wasn't available, but you had to go to a lot of different places to do that. It also, in order for you to really understand how things connected or why that was important, it was difficult to understand. So for me, this book allows us to not only present those domains, but also show why they're important and really how can they be used. So example, in chapter 5 in the security section, we spend a lot of time talking to what are some of the requirements that you might see in a real live environment, and then what are some of the possible solutions? Because in the real world, that's what you're up against. You're constantly getting, I want to do this, or I want to do that. And the more information you can have that actually give you the solutions, not just an example, is actually the key to this. So a lot of times when, and especially for a CTA exam, for a domain exam, or for the CTA board itself, you're given the scenario and you have to give a solution. So the solutions are really important. So we spend a lot of time in the book really thinking about how do you answer that question and what is a possible choice and what might be more optimal than something else.
Sure. So pretty much everyone I speak to in the Salesforce ecosystem, I would say a very big percentage at least, want to go down the architecture path, whether or not that means becoming a CTA. It quite often it is, but it can just mean being an architect, right? So who is the book aimed at? Like, is it for people that are already architects or people that want to be an architect?
Yeah, so this one, I mean, I look at it and I see 3 different groups of readers that can really get a lot for it. And I think you kind of hit it on even in your question. So I have some folks that work for me who are kind of new to the environment, and they're really looking for what does it mean to be an architect? So for them, this is a good book for them to kind of see the global aspect of, you know, the end-to-end, what does it mean to really be an architect? So it's kind of entry level. It's also built for someone that's in the middle of a project and they're trying to figure out how to put together the best possible solution. They can go to our book, open it up, go to chapter 5, chapter 6, and see, okay, this is how these guys put together the frameworks. I might be able to utilize that in my project. You know, so that's kind of an example. And then the third one, of course, is that journey to CTA.
Yeah.
So you know, that's a big area.
Sure.
I think one of the definite ones also I'll add, which from my perspective, I saw a big audience for was consulting practices, as well as like the architects who get CTA and then they start their own practice. A lot of times they are not able to share their knowledge enough with others if they already have in one place. This could be a framework for any consulting practice that wants to start their best practices with like, here you start with this and you can add to this more, you know? So that's another area. And one other thing that I wanted to say, like for the entry part of it, like what we have also tried to do in this book is give a lot of the complex, you know, concepts of Salesforce. We've broken them down with some stories with everyday situations. Something like as if like ordering in a restaurant, what does that have to do with like integration patterns, for example, when you're doing request, reply, all of those kind of frameworks. We've explained it through that. We've also taken like for identity and access management to describe the entire identity and access management. We tried to do an airport security scenario and walk them through that. So people can really relate with it and keep that in their head rather than memorize it.
Sure. So you've kind of broken down the complexities of architecture into a way that you would hope a lot of people can understand.
Yeah. Believe it or not, I'll just tell you one more thing. Like just my son, he's 17 years old and he's been trying to figure out his career and so forth. And he was like, Dad, what are you writing? And I gave him my book. I said, like, just read my chapter 1. And he was like, I do want to become a Salesforce architect by just reading chapter 1. And I mean, of course, makes me very happy. I hope he follows through. But just for that, I was like, this is what I want. This is what I want to hear from my readers.
You know? Yeah, nice. Yeah, that's so nice to hear.
This episode of Talent Hub Talk is sponsored by our friends from Flow Republic. Flow Republic is a Salesforce architect academy that works with individuals and businesses to upskill and prepare Salesforce architects for the CTA review board. They also have a number of other offerings, including coaching and guiding on areas such as soft skills, consulting, and design training. Flow Republic are some of the brightest minds in the Salesforce ecosystem and have a proven track record of developing Salesforce professionals and helping architects to reach their goal of becoming a CTA. To find out more about the value they can add, please check out flowrepublic.com.
So what was your favorite topic, each of you, to write and to cover?
So, I mean, when I think about the book and try to figure out what my favorite topic was, I'm really torn because there's so many different topics in the book that really helped kind of frame my approach to kind of my writing style and everything else. But I would say there's the best thing would be we have been able to integrate the story. So when we go back and look, and I've been teasing DJ a little bit, you know, the way he looks at the architecture design and then takes a story and starts to build on that has been super helpful. So, you know, for me, some of the favorite parts of the book are where we really integrate those stories into the use. And you're looking at it from an abstract perspective, and it comes right back into, okay, this is how this means technical. So that was big. So for me, probably the best part of the book is probably chapter 2, where we kind of introduce that storytelling aspect of it and then give you this big framework across, this is what it looks like across the board. So that was my favorite. DJ, what about yours?
Just how I was bringing the story part of it, what Jim was adding a ton of value in is like, after the story ended, he was adding the moral of the story, which is essentially, what do you choose now that you know everything about integration, for example? I mean, first of all, we enjoyed writing this book, right? Because it was just so much fun. But more importantly, like the integration chapter is a great example where we talk about this heavy stuff with all the integration. We put in our stories. We do all of this stuff. But then at the end, we leave the readers with saying, now that you know everything, let me give you a quick cheat sheet. When this is this, do this. When this is this, do this. And Jim kind of put together enormous number of tables in the chapter to just kind of give them the decision guides. So that was, you don't have to second guess it again. But you also know behind the scenes with the stories, why the justification is for choosing that.
Sure. So I'm hearing all of the good stuff, right? But there must have been times where you disagreed, surely. No two architects can write a book and agree on everything. So how did you manage that? Because like I can understand someone writing a book themselves and putting all of their own theory and practice into that book. But two people that have never actually worked on a project together, how do you kind of deal with that potential conflict?
I'll say my piece and maybe like this will be still all. You know, there was a time when like I had started off with like writing this book on my own, but I realized very quickly this is a monumental task and I was being overambitious. I was really looking for a partner. Actually, I was very selfish at that time, but like I wasn't really looking for a partner. I thought like I could still go in. Talking with Jim, I was always in touch with him and so forth. And instantly it came up that, you know, Jim should be my partner because he was going to be earlier the technical reviewer, but like the partner. And I cannot tell you how much of a great decision that was. He is a industry veteran. He has the patience where like he will listen to you all day long and then kind of bring you back to saying, how does this matter? And he always came down to like, what is the reader getting to this? Because I have the idea of like, oh, I want to add this. I want to add that. I want to add this. And he was like, look, you're getting way out of scope. This is not right. And so I really got lucky that I got a partner like him. And I hope that we could write more books together, you know?
Yeah. And I would say, I mean, certainly when you write a topic as broad as this one, there's always difference of opinions and processes that go into play. We also had a great network of resources. So, you know, one of the things that I had going was Salesforce Generations, which was a CTA group that was a study group that, you know, we had been working. My son is also at IBM. He's a technical architect on Salesforce as well. So there's something that runs in the process here. He's a little bit older, so he's actually already into the career, but we put together this Salesforce Generations team to really help people understand that process. So what was nice is as we started writing the book together, we also got involved more with the team. And there's about 8 or 9 of us that come on every Sunday to kind of go through stuff. So we were able to take the really tough ones that we didn't agree with. We'd push it back over to the Salesforce Generation team and say, hey, you know, what do you guys think? And they would tear us apart. They would break down different things. They'd give us different ideas. They'd pull up, you know, the research that they've come up with. And they usually got us either, you know, either disagreeing, you know, with the answer and then figuring out that they were right, or saying, hey, you know what, we never thought of it that way, let's go this direction. So I really feel like it was kind of a family of the of folks that kind of were joined in with the generations team, but it was also the ability to kind of listen and think about how to solve that. And at the end of the day, the goal was, how do we make it the right type of solution for the reader? So we always stopped and said, doesn't matter whether I'm right or wrong, it's what does the reader need to get for this particular solution? And then our technical reviewer also did a great job of helping us, you know, kind of fix areas that we might have had some slight differences on. I know two nights ago, we were scrambling to fix one item on chapter 4 that wasn't quite right. So we went in there and said, okay, yep, thank you for the feedback, and we fixed that. So.
Yeah, nice. And obviously, people learn in different ways, right? So the idea of reading a book to some people might not be the best way that they learn. So is it like lots of text, or is it a visually engaging book as well? Is there a lot of, I know you've mentioned the stories behind it, but can people, like if they're going to take a lot away from reading and looking visually at the different ideas that you have, is that something they'll get from this book as well?
Let me just say it this way. I think that's where the highest amount of time went in. I'm a visual person myself. Jim is a visual person. And essentially, we said that we can't make this book boring, because at the end of the day, it's kind of like a movie, like the Avengers. Like, you have to have an action scene every 2 seconds or 2 minutes. What has happened is that we have 500 pages. So out of the 500 pages, I would say like every 2 pages has at least one diagram and one table, possibly. So you can imagine like 500 pages, how many diagrams and how many tables you have there.
Yeah, nice.
And yeah, and there's a little bit of a sacrifice when you go to visualization versus words. So, you know, the old adage of a picture's worth 1,000 words. We tried to take advantage of that. There's some text, of course, that pulls it, but I would say we erred more on the side of making the visual and making the kind of the charts and tables the most valuable piece to it, so that people can really get into it quickly, get to the topic. And we always point them to other directions where they can get a lot more detail.
Sure. So for anyone listening or watching this that wants to be an architect, I think a lot of people think, right, an architect designs solutions, that's their role. But what else goes into being an architect? Like, once a solution is designed, and or even before that, you get to the whiteboard to design a solution, like what else makes up the role of an architect that you both enjoy?
I can give my 2 cents, and then Jim, I'd love to hear your part. But really speaking, I think that was the key portion for some of the chapter 2 is dedicated into how do you even begin, you know, and this is not really just to an architect, but like to self-starters, anybody and so forth. And essentially there's that concept of Fazeola analysis that we brought in into the book, which is essentially at whether you start in the beginning of a project, middle of the project, end of the project, there's this analysis that you have to do, which has the business domain and the holistic view of all 7 architecture domains included together. We do feel that designing in Salesforce is way different than AWS or Azure or anything as such, which are IaaS and PaaS based solutions. In Salesforce, you have to be critical about how much data storage, all of these different aspects. And we have dedicated an entire chapter to how to think like an architect, how to build like an architect, and how to design like an architect in the outside of the 7 domains that we've already covered in detail. But Jim?
Yeah, and the way I look at it is the architect world has really evolved very significantly. It's really the full spectrum. So it's pulling from the technical side, but it's also pulling the business issues, the technical issues, the personnel issues, and really how do you communicate that? So it's really kind of a combination. So for us, we tried to make sure that we blended that whole experience so that as architects, they could see the value of each one of those. And I think we said before already is that the goal here is not just the technology, but why is it important? And then what are some of the best possibilities? How do you approach that? So that was really kind of the way that we looked at it from the technical kind of evolution side of things from an architect perspective.
Sure. Your book is going to plug a gap in the market, but what other resources have helped you on your journey? So obviously the study group you've mentioned, but what else out there in the ecosystem have you found to be useful and something you'd recommend to people on the architecture or potentially CTA journey?
Yeah, I mean, so for us, there's kind of the personal answer and then there's the global answer. So personally, I think for both DJ and I, we've been fortunate enough in the roles that we play in the companies that we've worked for, that we've actually had a lot of hands-on experience so that we can draw from that experience. So we're able to, you know, take the industry experience. I probably do 15 architectural solutions each year. beginning to end. So I have an opportunity to either be directly involved or kind of overseeing and reviewing every deal that's going on in terms of delivery side. And I know DJ, especially in his new role, is actually, you know, getting to see probably even a larger spectrum of things. So that industry experience gave us that hands-on. What I would love to see, you know, the individual architects and really the people who are reading this text to take away from it is that the information that we're giving you is based off of a lot of personal experiences, but we also tapped into that ecosystem. The Salesforce ecosystem with our, you know, with the study group with the Salesforce Generations, but it's beyond that. I mean, I look at the network of people that DJ works with, I look at my network, you know, we're touching probably, you know, 10, 15, maybe even 20,000 different experts that talk to us on a fairly regular basis. So we've got kind of a huge network of resources that have helped put this whole thing together. So as an architect coming into this, or someone who's looking at this from an architecture perspective, the biggest thing I would tell them is engage with the network, engage with the ecosystem, join in to the local communities, join in and take the advantage to, if you can't work on a bunch of projects, no problem. Talk to people who are working on those projects so you can learn from them and gain that experience. So it's all experience. Salesforce is growing so fast. It is doing so many different things. We'll never know. The two of us don't know enough to cover even a part of what Salesforce is doing today. They just acquired another couple of companies this last week. You know, so it's growing quick. So the goal is get that network out there and start pulling from that and then assimilating that into the business.
Sure.
One of the other things I'll definitely say in addition, so I think like Jim hit it on the nail on the head, is that we have like a lot of experience with these projects. So we see a lot of architects bringing on solutions and then we kind of talk to them and we get that. But also this, one of the things that has helped me a lot and I would definitely recommend for others is that whenever you do a trailhead or you understood something, share it with others. Because what's going to happen is that the community kind of comes and corrects you. And especially the CTA group that we've been part of, we always kind of learn something and then we kind of literally just be vulnerable and kind of like share that. And essentially they kind of give us feedback immediately saying, no, that's not how it is. And this is why. And then the context comes in. So a lot of the things that we have put in the books are really kind of materials, not so much just from Trailhead or anything as such, but more from like what we have learned from other architects.
Yeah, nice. I did a podcast recently with the gentleman from Europe that recently passed his CTA, and he made a comment about that, like it's a new generation of CTAs that are coming through now because you don't necessarily have to work for, and I know you both work for big companies, but you don't have to work for a big company any longer to be a CTA because there are all of these smaller like spin-off groups and academies and like Sebastian who introduced us, Flow Republic. There's so many of these like smaller groups that are starting up, even if they're just run by individuals sharing their knowledge, which I think is pretty incredible, right? Because historically you had to be with a big four or one of the big companies or Salesforce themselves to get the project exposure that you needed.
I would agree. And yeah, I think you're right on the market. I mean, I've been watching the Salesforce ecosystem for a long time and have touched it for more than 16 years in different capacities. It is uniquely open. Most manufacturers, when they create products like a Salesforce product, will lock it down and you have to go through their system and you have to pay for, you know, their certification process and education. Within the Salesforce world, they opened that up almost day one. So, I mean, I remember you were talking a second ago, DJ, about some of your first projects. My first project was before I did a CTI integration project before they actually had open CTI. I was doing, you know, I was doing stuff on the platform before it was force.com. So for me, I had to learn things that just wasn't available in the normal product. When I went to the Salesforce environment, the system was there. It's like, wow, they have these tools. So for me, the Salesforce world has changed how technology energy, the industry is going to go to market in the future. And I think you're going to see, you said it, it's the new generation of Salesforce and really architects in a whole and the market as a whole. Nobody's going to get away with, you know, proprietary systems that nobody can learn. It's got to be open or it's not going to survive.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So final question from me, and maybe the most important, when and how can people get access to the book?
So first of all, it's already available as pre-order on Amazon. Yesterday, I had a little bit of a heart attack when I saw that it was out of stock, which I don't know why, but you know, at least like it might be good news, but people can try and get that. I would say definitely Amazon is the first place. But then there have also been a lot of readers who've connected with me and said it's not available in their country. You know, so I've kind of recommended that they go to apress.com. Essentially, if it is not available through Amazon for delivery, it is available through Apress. But also lastly, it can be available in the Kindle version. And Apress also delivers electronic versions of that. And it is going to be available for delivery. The people who have pre-ordered, first of all, thank you. It's going to be available on Jan 8th. And one essential comment I wanted to make, I think this is very close to both of our hearts. We have dedicated 20% of all earnings that we earn to go to St. Jude's Children's Hospital. We feel that St. Jude's Children's Hospital has been really doing the work that we all are supposed to do. We never take the time to do so, which is take care of and protect the children in this world with who are fighting and combating big diseases. So anybody who buys it, 20% of all their money, at least the ones that we are going to be getting profits of, will be going to St. Jude's Children's Hospital.
Yeah, nice. Well, that's great to hear. And thank you so much for your time. And final question. If people want to reach out to you and hit you up as ask you any questions, where's the best place to find each of you?
LinkedIn.
So yeah, LinkedIn is probably the fastest and easiest, but I also have a Twitter feed that you can get to Jim Hutcherson on Twitter. So either side, but LinkedIn is probably the fastest and most available.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much and good luck for the big release, and look forward to hearing more from our audience once they've had a chance to read.
Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review. We're keen for this podcast to reach as many people in the Salesforce ecosystem as possible, and your reviews will help us do that.